You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of March 3rd, 2021, and Anthem could have been a contender.
Experience Points Podcast. I'm George Alvor.
My name is Scott Chester.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, and this is a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. Sad news today, ladies and gentlemen.
Pour one out.
Pour one out for the now officially, I guess, dying game, because I think the servers are still technically live.
Correct.
But we received news.
BioWare. We were told directly.
In inside scoops. BioWare and EA have decided that they are officially no longer supporting the game Anthem.
Yes.
You and I played Anthem a little bit. I think I played in the beta.
Yeah.
Did you play it at all?
I don't know if I played it at all. It's one of those things where, like, you could tell me that I did, and I would believe you, but I do not remember it.
Well, I mean, there you go. I mean, that's the problem, I guess.
I guess that's true. The end. Yeah. Everyone, thanks for listening, everybody.
So this was a scenario, actually. I remember this because I made a pre-order and I played the beta. And this is a rare occurrence because I almost never pre-order a game. And two, if I pre-order and play the beta, the odds are I probably really like this game.
Yeah.
But I played the beta and then canceled my pre-order.
Oof.
Because I was so dissatisfied with the experience in the beta.
Yeah.
A lot of people were dissatisfied, so much so, in fact, that they announced that they were kind of, like, what? I don't know if it was in a formal apology, but they announced that they were going to be committing more supports to Anthem, not less, initially. That it was going to be Anthem Next, or Anthem 2.0, I think they were calling it.
Yep.
And the intent was to give the entire game an overhaul. Like, rethink end game design, rethink combat design, like, really just fix a lot of the issues that folks were having with the game upon release. And what, this game came out, I want to say 2019, right? It has to have been over a year ago by now.
I believe it was like exactly a year. I mean, there was a you know, an early release or whatever, but I think it was the beginning of 2020.
Yeah, it says it was originally released in January in 2019.
Oh, 2019. Okay, never mind.
So quite a while ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, feels like only yesterday. It feels like March, you know, from last year was just one
quick
month.
That is true. I mean, we can talk about that, but like that definitely, I don't think that lost year did any favors for it. But yeah, but go on. So yeah, so 2019.
Yeah, so 2019 comes around. Yeah, the game drops. Reviews are poor. The core gameplay loop is not satisfying. And the team says, look, we're gonna give it an overhaul. We're going to give this a serious attention. We're going to come out with something that's better and more satisfying and a fixed and final product.
Yeah.
I think that there is a lot of hope and aspiration when you hear an announcement like that, right? Because this would not be the first game that has come out that is given new life by the care and commitment from the development studio producing it, right? Mm-hmm. We mentioned Rainbow Six a lot, but there are other games out there that have, you know, similarly received a lot of care, a lot of patches, support, DLC updates. No Man's Sky is like a common comment we have on the podcast as well as another example of a game that came out to a lot of flack and a lot of criticism. They bunkered down and they fixed their product and they re-released it.
Yeah.
With the news coming out today, it sounds like they decided, you know what, on second thought, futile effort, let's not waste our resources.
Yeah. I mean, it's so, because they put out this news approximately a week ago. They had put out another, maybe this was just a leak, but there was news going around several weeks ago that there was going to be some sort of decision, you know, like some sort of decision rendered that they were going to figure out, they were going to determine what the future of Anthem was. And it makes me so glad that, you know, I've never been involved in some sort of like meeting where it's like, well, you know, they're going to decide X and it's in the news right now, you know, because everyone's waiting on this thing where like you probably make your best pitch and then you just have to leave the room and hope that, you know, whatever the executives go your way. Like, what a crappy thing to see in the news, you know?
It's like waiting for the bad news from a doctor or something.
Yeah, except everyone on Kotaku is also waiting, you know? It's like, ugh.
That's such a bizarre thing. You know, I there's a part of me, though, that is kind of glad that we've come to a place where we can all admit that just fix it in post is not an accurate way to release a game, you know?
Right.
And it's just, I was talking about this with my nephew on Twitter the other day, specifically this Anthem news, because, you know, we talked last week about Valheim, a game that is in early access, but nevertheless feels fully polished, well-realized, just clean, elegant. There's just a lot to love about a game like Valheim, even though technically it's not even out yet, you know? And then you read stories like, I think, I forget who wrote it, but there was a big piece last year about what happened to Anthem. Mm. Maybe it was the year before. Like I said, time is a flat circle. In 2020, we'll never speak of it again.
Right.
After this year. There was, you know, a lot of like last minute changes to Anthem. There was this constant push to get the game out of the door. There was a lot of churn at the company as well, of people leaving that were in fundamental roles who were working on Anthem. And the game never felt like it had settled. From everything that I have read about the development experience on the game, it's that this is the quintessential of example of a game that is pushed out the door before they've discovered what it is that makes this game special, right?
Yep.
The classic example from that article that was so shocking to me was that Flight, a fundamental experience in Anthem, was something that was put in and then taken out, then put in again, and then taken out again, and then last minute put back in again, right? Mm-hmm. Something as fundamental as that was not really locked on that title until extremely close to launch. And that seems like it was under the guise that, look, we just need to make it polished. We need to make it look good. And if there's an issue, then we will fix it. I mean, we're BioWare, right? We have the resources. We have the expertise. We can solve it. And I think that that has been the death of a lot of games over the past 5+ years, because we're under this impression that you can sort of release something unfinished and then just fix it afterwards. You know, we've seen other games die on the vine, and in a way, this feels to me like it feels almost gratifying, because this feels like confirmation that oftentimes games do need to be, you know, they need to be honed down. They need to be focused.
Yeah.
They need to have a clear understanding of what makes that core gameplay loop entertaining and fun. Like, you need to allow developers to discover that, and that's when you really invest, and that's when you flesh it out and make something good and solid, rather than being in, you know, a scenario where you see so many games that are rushed, right? Like Cyberpunk was the same thing this year. Another game that was, at the end of the day, forced out the door when there were still so many critical issues with that game. And there was high demand from publishers, and there was a large understanding that, look, the community will understand, we'll just fix it in post. And I just think that's so unhealthy for the industry. And it's just unhealthy. And it's kind of anti-consumer as well for the players who are out here, you know, investing their dollars and their hype and their excitement for a game just to have it be busted and literally buy something that is, I mean, I joke, but literally unplayable for some people.
Right. How does that square up with the rise of the early access?
Well, I mean, that's my point, right? It was something like Valheim. Valheim is early access, right?
Yeah.
But it's early access not because they haven't discovered what makes the game fun or interesting.
Mm.
You know, it's not early access because there's something about this game that is not solved yet, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lack of long-term content, and they have lofty plans for the game, but
the core
in a lot of ways the core of this game is done, right? Like you can farm a large number of materials. There's 5 different biomes. There's 5 different bosses. There's an elaborate crafting system. You can build a lot of homes. All of the pieces are already there. And not just are they already there, but a lot of them feel polished. You know, they feel like they have been given a lot of attention and care in their craftsmanship. So for me, I think the early access games that have been succeeding and that have been finding footing, that's what they have done, right? Like, they've solved something, and then they said, well, now we will build upon this success after launch, right? Or as we go with early access. What the some of the horror game? What's that horror game that's really popular on Twitch? Dead by Daylight.
Oh, never mind.
So Dead by Daylight is an example where I believe that game came out in early access, and it's been out for a while now. But in either case, it's a game that has been growing and adding on to what has been a very fun and compelling core loop. Yes. And I recall when that game was first being more widely played on Twitch, it didn't pick my interest at all. And now, years after it's been released, that's a game where I'm fascinated by it because there's just so much content, and it seems additive rather than restorative in the way that they've approached releasing that content after launch.
Right.
And I should say, not all early access games are like that. There's plenty of bad early access games. You know, I don't mean to say like, oh, those folks have gotten it right, you know? But right. I think the games that have found success that have been in early access have found success not because they struck while the iron was hot and they just pushed something out, but because what they've released is functionally done, or some core of it is done. And now they're building on top of that experience.
Right. How far into Anthem did you get before ejecting?
I mean, I played the beta and then canceled my pre-order, so not very much.
Right.
But enough to, you know, get a sense of what the combat felt like. Certainly to like explore that little, you know, the home base that they set you up in and play some multiplayer with friends during the beta.
Yeah.
And that's kind of when, you know, when it struck me that it felt, I mean, again, you know, as I recall in this time, right, what people were hoping for was a Destiny 2 replacement, something that could unseat that particular beast.
Yeah.
And it looked like they were attempting that with Anthem because of the design of the world and the sort of like mech characters that you play as.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the game looked good. It was highly polished. It looked gorgeous jumping into it, right?
Yeah.
But it didn't have any sort of immediacy to its experience in the way that Destiny did. And so, of course, it just didn't replace it for a lot of people. I stopped playing Destiny, but a lot of people continued to play Destiny after Anthem. They didn't unseat that particular Goliath in the room.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking about that in terms of the... because the other thing about this game was not just that it was a... it was a game that potentially had promised to have like a 2.0 or whatever, but it was also kind of supposed to be a live game, which means that like they would have had to continue. It would be a service, you know, they would have to continue to iterate on it in addition to doing the like, you know, Final Fantasy 14 style reboot or something, you know? I was just thinking in terms of the state of live games right now. You know, like what is out there, what has been successful and why? Because it feels like a lot of live games have had a long shelf life. And like, what was the difference? Was it that core fun loop? You know, like what is that what carries things through, or was there something else that, you know, why did Anthem not catch on, but you know, any number of other live games or esports style games, or, you know, even something like Among Us, you know, pops back up. Like, it's just, I don't know. I was having a hard time like figuring out the mathematics of it. You know, like why didn't that work for it?
You know? I mean, dude, if I could tell you, I would be a millionaire. Like that, you know, I wish I could tell you because that would be great. But I don't really know what to say other than, in many ways, I think that the live brand space is kind of a wild west, you know?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, something like Anthem, which is a sort of AAA attempt at that, like a high budget space, right? Yeah. That is very risky because you're spending a lot of cash on what is functionally a bet, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, can you unseat your competitors in that space?
Right.
We have seen other companies... whose games I will not mention, possibly because for reasons, try to enter the Battle Royale space with mixed results, right?
Right.
And it just doesn't get picked up for one reason or another. Sometimes I think it's because the game isn't finished. It's not done. It doesn't feel like a realized whole. Sometimes I think it's because people are still interested in the other ones. Like your player base is already occupied and you don't make a big enough splash that you're late to the party.
Right.
Sometimes right. it's a combination of all of the above, or, you know, reasons that I can't name, but certainly it's not a sure thing, right? I don't think, I think the past couple of years have been interesting in the live game space because there are success stories that seem to be coming from out of the fucking blue, right?
Yeah.
Among Us is a good example, but Valheim is another one. Like, that's number 3 or 4 on Twitch broadcast right now.
Right.
And it's an early access game made by 5 people out of Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they succeeding where a company with hundreds of employees around the world are not?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There must also be even BioWare says in the post that they put up there, there is an opportunity cost for them also. I mean, you know, they got a whole new Mass Effect coming. They have some sort of Dragon Age thing coming, and I'm sure there's, you know, some other in development projects that they're not even talking about. So like, there's also a trade off, you know, every team and hour spent working on trying to make Anthem 2.0 is an hour that is not going into Mass Effect, which is itself in a pretty precarious position right now, you know?
Yeah.
So there's also probably some, you know, time and effort problems that didn't help it.
Yeah, like, and I get that. I don't begrudge them for canceling or anything. You know, it's not like they are breaking a fundamental promise. Like, they don't owe, I don't know, they don't owe us anything, I guess.
Yeah.
And I feel bad. Like, you know, a lot of people put in a lot of hard work into Anthem and it didn't work out, and that sucks. Like, I feel bad for them for sure.
Right.
But it's not a new story. Like, there are other games like that, you know? And I think to some extent you kind of just need to get used to it, right? That, like, you're not going to have something that's going to be a big success. And I think maybe the biggest crime is assuming that you do have one on your hands before you really feel good about it, you know?
Right. Well, that's a good transition point to something that I was thinking about in terms of what games, it's a two-part thing. What games, what are the could have beens, you know, like what are the games where, 'cause I really do feel like, for whatever reason, there was something there with Anthem. It just ran out of runway. You know, it just, the time and effort equation was not in its favor, and it just had a bad roll of it. But there are other games that are kind of like that. Both games that I think did get it, you know, did get that extra time and it succeeded, and games that I just feel like in my heart of hearts could have succeeded. You know, with another sequel or another big revision or some sort of support. So I'm interested in what some of your, you know, could have been a contender list of games were.
Yeah. So one of them, I hope all of these actually kind of get more opportunities to shine. I mean, one will not in this iteration, but I'm interested about it in the future. And that is Star Wars Galaxies.
So
this is an MMO that launched in 2003, I want to say.
Yep.
And it was supported for like a few years. And one of the things that was so fascinating to me about Star Wars Galaxies, especially those early days of it, was that it was a game that you could play in just a variety of ways. Like, you could spend your whole time designing spaceships for other people to use and fly around the galaxy.
Yeah.
You could be a bounty hunter. You could spend most of the time in space and not actually on land. There was no reason for you to need to be a Jedi or need to be a Jedi. And indeed, early on in the game, if you wanted to become a Jedi, it took an insane amount of like hours and work to become that class, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, that felt like a more realized version of a true-to-life Star Wars story.
Mm-hmm.
And then they released an expansion, I think like 3 or so years after launch, where they made a lot of like what they were considering quality of life changes to the game that kind of functionally like killed it. It made it much more like World of Warcraft. Mm-hmm. And they stopped supporting that game. It was alive, I think, for like another 6 years. So it's hard to say this day it didn't get time. It certainly had time, but it was an MMO that never really picked up again after that period. Right. And there's a lot of MMOs, by the way. I was thinking about some of these games that sort of died on the vine. And MMOs are a great place to look for dead and dying games because so many have launched with some small amount of fanfare or some amount of people saying, oh, this will be interesting. And they're trying something new here and never got off the ground again. So one, I think that maybe you and I played All Points Bulletin. Do you remember this game?
Oh, APB.
APB. Like, APB came out. Apparently, by the way, APB still exists. Like, the servers got shut down, but then another studio bought them, and now they're live again. So if you want to play APB, I think you can.
Whoa.
The Secret World was another MMO that I played briefly that was kind of like Lovecraftian modern-day adventure style. So there's a bunch of MMOs like this, right? Where like they'll come out, they'll get a little bit of support, but there's not a critical amount of support. And so it loses interest and it becomes a game either if it's still around, it's just for those whales that spend a lot of money. But no one is really talking about it or spending much time in it. Star Wars Galaxies, though, to me, that feels like the right way to do an expansive Star Wars story.
Mm.
And I think that if we were to revisit what a Star Wars MMO could be, I think the right way to go would be something like Galaxies. It's just that there was this desire at the time to take on the likes of World of Warcraft, which is still around today, right? So no one succeeded in that endeavor.
Right.
Rather than force something that was truly unique and your own that was more true to what that Star Wars world could be. And I think that was a big miss.
Did you ever play the Star Trek Online MMO? That's the other one that's still hanging out.
No, did you try that?
No, I've never played it. And I mean, I think it's gone, but it's again, it's one of those crazy things where it's like, if you go to their website, it's like, you know, there's like patch notes from last week, you know?
Yeah.
And it's, so, I mean, it's hard to even say that it's a failure. You know, this thing must have been around for like 10 years, you know, like it, and it's still going for,
I mean, there's a lot of people that all they do is play MMOs. You know, that's what they do. They play with a group of like 20 people that they know online and they just churn through MMOs.
Yeah. For some reason, I think of this question of like what game could have been great. You know, it was almost there. Like what game, what could have been done with it? I also just think about it in terms of single player games too, because I think that it's similar. I think they succeed or fail for similar reasons that Anthem succeeded or failed, because they just haven't figured out the mechanics or didn't find the audience or whatever. One thing that a game that I played within the last few years, which I think maybe did okay, but for me it needed like one more sequel to really get it right. Do you remember that new JRPG called Octopath Traveler?
Yes. Yeah.
I wanted to like that game so much, and I did like that game in many respects. Like, I think the battle system was excellent, but they needed like one more push to make the story make sense in the way that they were telling, you know. It was like, we're gonna have eight stories go simultaneously, which is kind of cool, but it just then turns into a mishmash where you can't have any sort of linear progression because the player could play them at any time, you know. Like, something just didn't quite land. And I wonder, you know, they're putting out that strategy game. I don't know if you saw that, but they're putting out basically a Final Fantasy Tactics type of tactical RPG game. But I always wanted them to do another Octopath-esque game, but just
Traveler.
It's just like another swing at it, because they were just so close, you know?
Yeah, that's a good one. That game I did buy on your recommendation, and then I played like 5 hours and then never touched it again.
Learned your lesson.
Another one that I thought about, because they did eventually get it right, was the numerous amount of Magic the Gathering digital versions of that game. Because there are currently two Magic the Gathering digital versions that are still getting play. One is Magic the Gathering Online, which is a hideous interface, but is functionally a online version of Paper Magic. Where all the sets are available, all the cards that are ever printed are available, but they cost real money, right? You have to actually buy in the same way that you buy into Paper Magic. The prices are different, but you're still buying into that system, and that's why everything is archaic, right? You're basically playing a very old game and an old interface, and there's nothing like new, fancy, or special about it. The newest version, Magic the Gathering, I guess it's just called Arena, MTG Arena, is finally the version that has been successful. This is the one that a lot of people continue to play. It doesn't have all of the legacy cards, but it's you know, it's growing their card base. They've added new expansions. Every new set that comes out, this is the new version. But there were old versions that I remember playing a lot of as well, right? Duels of the Planeswalker was another version that I played quite a bit of on the console. And it's so interesting to me that there are these, you know, early attempts to make it work, And I think often they found themselves hitting this wall where they didn't want to compete against the paper version of their own game.
Yeah.
And at some point something clicked where they said, we don't have to, you know, like we can make this work. And, you know, Magic has never been bigger than it is today. Like, so many people play Magic, and Paper Magic in particular. You know, MTG Arena doesn't even have Commander, which is by far the most popular format. Mm. And yet a lot of people are playing it to sort of satiate their hunger for playing Magic. But there were all of these other early attempts. And in particular, there's one thing I want to shout out for those early attempts was they produced puzzle modes. Mm. So if you're familiar at all with like a card game, right? It's kind of like a game of like a chess, right? Where you can look at a board state and try to figure out what the optimal play is. Mm-hmm. And in the magazines that they used to publish for Magic the Gathering, these physical magazines that I would look at when I was like in middle school and high school, they would include puzzles that would show you a board state and say, you need to win on your turn. How do you do that? They'll tell you what cards you have. You can mm-hmm. see exactly what's on the table. You can see what you have. And you have to think through, well, what are the sequence of events that I need to do in order to be able to swing for lethal or combo mm-hmm. off, right?
Right.
And
right.
they made these digital versions of these puzzles on the game. And I loved doing them. It was so fun because it made you think about the complexity of Magic the Gathering and really puzzle out a solution. And they dropped that when Arena came out. And I think they even released another digital version of Magic the Gathering without those puzzle ones in particular. But there was something about that type of play that I just found so satisfying. And it's dead. Like, you don't see that anywhere. I don't see anyone talking about those puzzles. I don't see new puzzles. I don't see the community thinking up these puzzles. But, man, it seemed like, to me, it was its own little niche, its own little game experience that is just sort of dead on the vine.
Ugh. Tragic.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. One that I was thinking about a lot, especially, well, it's actually kind of a twofer, but they were around at that's in the same era. And I was thinking about these in terms of the year we are, well, went through and are currently having, is the Xbox 360 era 1 vs. 100 and
hell yeah,
the,
dude, 1 vs. 100
and the Netflix party app that the 360 used to have on it.
Yeah.
It's, man, like, I mean, I know they weren't exactly the same thing, but they felt like they were of an era. And it's like, I can't believe that didn't get another, that they didn't take another swing at that.
What's wild to me, too, is that game was widely popular. People loved 1 vs. 100, you know? Being able to tune in and participate and actually play, that's such a cool idea. And there's nostalgia for it. I legitimately think that if someone were to release that game today and announce, hey, we're coming back, baby, 1 vs. 100, people would be stoked.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose that's what, remember Trivia HQ from a couple years ago?
I guess that's
what it was.
And that took Office Spaces by storm. Like, people would come over to my desk to play Trivia HQ all the time.
It wasn't Xbox giving it another shot, but I mean, I think that was the proof that, like, there was something there, you know, like people definitely latched onto it, and it could have been, I mean, it was already big on 360, but not like HQ huge, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Netflix stuff, I just feel like that was so far ahead of its time. I'm sure it probably died because of like licensing and DRM bullshittery, because like, there's no reason why that shouldn't be a feature in every streaming service, other than like they're afraid of people like sharing or pirating or whatever. But like, it seems like the recreating the communal experience was such a cool idea in that context of, you know, all watching something together. And like during this day and age, it would have been even better. Like it's surprisingly hard to watch television together remotely.
I mean, in a way, isn't Fall Guys kind of like that? Like, it has a game show vibe.
I was thinking about Fall Guys because they definitely, it is that aesthetic, even at the end when they like tally up everyone who got knocked out, like they put them in the little, you know, TV cubes. Yeah.
Yeah. Like celebrity squares, right? That's what I always think about.
Yeah, yeah. They have like Hollywood squares style, but there's like 100 people, you know? There's something there that deserves a few more iterations and like in a big flashy way, you know?
Yeah. When are they going to make Hollywood stars and celebrities? Do they know things? What do they know? Let's find out the game.
Hollywood stars.
Hollywood. Excuse me. Hollywood. I will run us off with one more, and this is not really a game that I mean, I guess it's technically dead, but it didn't like die on the vine. It got a lot of years of play, but the theme, the space is dead, pun intended, and that's Battlefield 2142. Did you ever play this game?
Oh, I never played the game, but I know what you're talking about.
I mean, you know, this is a year where I praised Postscriptum for being this like realistic World War II shooter. Battlefield has always been at the forefront of creating these sort of large scale battles. I loved and played the hell out of 1943. Battlefield 2142 took place in the far future, and there were some really cool mechanics in there. Like one of the primary modes was each team fighting against a Titan, which was essentially an enormous like dropship, and battle changed based upon, you know, how your team was doing in their sort of large scale, slightly different objective fights. I think there's something there with future combat in this kind of large scale space, but it really feels like we've done the exact opposite and taken a step backwards when it comes to like milsim games. And we've doubled down on World War II. Battlefield went back to World War I, you know, let alone like far flung future. But I do think that is something that is interesting and ripe for more exploration and experimentation, but it just feels like, you know, even for something like Call of Duty, where it's now Cold War, like we're just stuck on past combats.
Yeah,
like we don't want to, I don't know, like put in the work to ideate around what a future large scale battle could be like from like a gameplay perspective.
There's even when Call of Duty, it's weird because Call of Duty went a little bit into the future, you know, like the Cold War games and the even I think the mainline Modern Warfare series went to like the near future, you know, like 25 years in the future, maybe like, you know, just enough that there's more LEDs on your guns, you know. But then you're right. Then at a certain point they blinked and they were like, okay, fuck it, we're going back to World War One. And then they were like, okay, fuck it, we're going back to Modern Warfare. We're going to remake Modern Warfare. Yep. You know, like there seems to be some sort of barrier.
I want my postmodern warfare, you know?
I mean, I suppose there is an argument to be made that if people are really craving the simulation of what does an AK sound like or whatever, like you're not going to get that in a far-flung future version. Like there is just going to have to be more imagination for it. But I agree, like it seems like there's space for
space,
if there is space for the grit, you know, the future grit versus just always having to be in the same couple scenarios.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, and there are games like, you know, Natural Selection 2 I mention all of the time, like Colonial Marines, like those types of games do have their hardcore fans, you know, so there's certainly an audience out there for it.
It feels like that game, did Dust ever come out? It was the game that was supposed to be connected to EVE Online.
Oh shit, that's, I mean, I don't know, I don't think so.
I feel like it did, but maybe the connection, it was one of those things that
dead game.
Well, there's kind of like a Molyneux-esque type vibe to it where it's like, this is going to be the connected to the, you know, the macro strategy layer is going to be connected to the micro battles on the ground. Like there is definitely a Molyneux type of vibe to it that I don't know if they ever truly achieved. Maybe they did, but maybe it just didn't catch on, which again makes it fit in this category. Yeah, they did.
So it was released in 2013 and then shut down 2016.
Oh, see, again, like there's
Dust something. Dust 514. Yeah.
There's something there. There's something to be said for how does the macro and micro strategy interplay together? Because, like, you know, the biggest you ever get is something like Battlefield, where it's still tactical battles. It's not like the sweeping theater of war. There's something there that I think with another revision or two, you could actually do, but it seems so daunting and so expensive because you're essentially making a strategy game and a shooter. It would seem like it'd be a big effort, you know?
I think one day someone will unlock that particular chest, you know? Yeah. Because I think that's why the people that I play Postscriptum with take that game so seriously, right? Like, there is this overlay between the macro strategy and then the micro execution that is just fascinating. It's just super interesting and fun to be engaged in that experience. That's what those Battlefield games felt like to me back in the day. And I don't think that anyone has produced something at the AAA level that, that you would see, you know? And I don't think Anthem applies in this case, because so much of the problems with Anthem was the development cycle and the push to be released before they sort of solved their own problems.
Right.
But I will say, I give credit to folks, even for something like Dust 514, where at least they swing for the fences, you know? Yeah. They think of something creative or unique or different, and if it doesn't get a hold of, catch a hold of people's attention, or comes out at the wrong time, or they just don't quite solve it, it feels like we need to make that incremental progress somehow, and sometimes that's failed games. Although, on it the other hand, I guess this is a good question for you. Do you think that these dead ends act as sort of warning signs, and that's why we don't see more of them?
Right.
You know, like, if there isn't a huge success, are we going to see fewer games like that? Like, because Anthem was a failure and didn't launch like that, do you think that sometimes people will learn the wrong lessons and say, well, that style of game's dead. We're not going to make another Destiny game. No more mechas. Right. No more, like, what did they call them? Javelins in Anthem?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel like at a certain point, that stuff is too cool to not make, you know? But it is more worrisome. It's more worrisome when you have a game like... I think a lot about Brutal Legend. Again, a single-player game, not necessarily a service game, but a game that... I felt there was like so much going on there, because like there was the kind of, you know, button mashy section. There was like, at a certain point, it basically turned into an RTS, you know, like there was, there's just so much, there's so much there. And I don't know if it has kind of a chilling effect that like, oh, we tried this new thing and it didn't succeed, therefore it will make the whole industry more conservative. You know, like that's the worst case scenario, because like, Double Fine never made a big game after that, you know?
Yep.
And I think that also makes people more shy about brand new franchises or things that can't be tied to some sort of sequel, or, you know, I think people do sometimes maybe learn the wrong lesson, but some of that stuff can live on, you know, like you see that stuff in the other games that Double Fine went on to make. So like, I think it is a danger, you know, like people do. There is a chilling effect potentially if people are looking at it the wrong way.
Yeah, someone will be inspired by it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really just want there to be a world where there is a game where you can have people that are like esports level Counter-Strike people, but also esports level StarCraft people, but be playing the same game.
Yes,
you know?
At the same time. I mean, I think that would be so fucking cool, you know? It's like
people
that like
can see the map.
Like the commander.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, oh shit, like this is the best shooter in the world, paired up with the best strategist in the world, and they're the core of this team. You know, that could be incredible.
Because coaches are already a fundamental part of team sports, right? People talk and think about that all of the time. It's fascinating to me when, you know, the hype and the news stories are about coaches that are moving teams even more than players, because they do play this very fundamental role. And you're right. I think that's just as fascinating in like a competitive sense as well. Yeah. I mean, the other thing is on the opposite flip coin of this hypothetical scenario, right? Or like, what are the games that could have been great? Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of scenarios where, you know, were it not for dumb luck, like maybe Miyazaki would never have been given a chance to make Dark Souls after Demon Souls.
Right.
Know? Like there are all kinds of games that are huge and infamous and people love dearly that were so close to never coming out, you know, for one reason or another.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and that's we use that example all the time, but it's because it's such a good example. Like they were so close. They were just like going to deactivate the servers for Demon's Souls, you know, that they were that close to basically winding that down. And who knows if that would have ever gotten to the point where it is now. It's like a headliner of a new console, you know?
And I think about that a lot, in particular with licensed games, because I think that there's a lot of licensed games that die on the vine because they never get the degree of support, or there's not enough care, or the licensee has too high of demands, or it's just sort of thrown out under the door. But every now and then we get, you know, an Arkham Asylum game, or we get
Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, right, exactly. Spider-Man, or the Warner Brothers Lord of the Rings games, right? Yeah. Like, there's a lot of games that are licensed games that seem to have succeeded where no one else could have. Yeah. And it's because there are the teams that care and there are people that put in the time and the effort. But, you know, there a lot of games walk that edge, right? When you have that much investment that at any moment, if it's not a success or it doesn't take off, or, you know, someone critical leaves the team, or the demands are too high, or something like Anthem happens, we could lose those too, you know? So we should count ourselves lucky for the games that we do have as much as for the games that we don't.
Yeah, those random coin flips that determine determine if we're playing a remake of Demon's Souls in 2021.
Right, exactly.
Cool. Well, let's leave it right there for this week. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can also find us wherever you find podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. Yeah. Find us, leave us a review.
All right, everyone. As always, thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao. Every time we